This episode of Film Sack is brought to you by Audible.com. At Audible.com, you can get so many audiobooks, periodicals, just name it, man. Unabridged awesome stuff. If you're into reading and you like to read on the go and you have a commute, well, is there a better idea than Audible.com? I don't think so. We'd like to save you a little money and get a rad book for free simply by going to audiblepodcast.com/filmsack.
That spring, we were all watching the events in space and wondering what the final effect would be. Astronomers argued over theory, while engineers got pretty excited about variables in magnetic fields. Mystics predicted earthquakes and the end of life as we knew it.
We knew then that we were being changed. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. Mining the very depths of film entertainment is what Film Sack does. My name is Scott Johnson. This is episode 232, and I'm joined today by Brian. Why did we do Gross Bugs two Gross Bug movies in a row? We're done away.
Hi. Hi. Hey, look here, Professor Antbite. I saw the thing back at the crop circles too, but I didn't want to tell you I saw the thing because I was afraid it might freak you out. Because, you know, ants, geometry, I mean, sure, math is a universal language, but geometry, well, that's the universal mambo. Mambo jumbo, you know, just facts on hand. Speaking of which, you need to go decontaminate that thing. It's gross. Also, you're one hairy dude, and that is coming from a hairy dude. So take it for what it's worth.
Hairy British man. For sure.
Harry dude and Harry dude.
No question about
when
it.
When Harry met Harrier.
That's right. Also with us, Randy, the farmer done got green goo on him, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Hi. Hi.
Randy. This week, we're going to go back, way back, to the invention of macro photography. And since this is a podcast, you're going to just have to listen as we describe things in extreme close-up. I've zoomed way in on Scott Johnson, and we're going to find out. Oh, this is interesting. I guess I should have expected this. It's a perfectly smooth, glossy surface. And it tastes like stale Doritos. Nice.
Oh, wow. Some have said that before. Now we have confirmation. With us finally, Brian, smart ants were all the rage at CES this year. Ibit.
So, you know how they say in the credits that no animals were harmed in the making of this film?
Yeah.
Right. I was a production assistant on Phase 4, and I can tell you that there's no way they can say that about this piece of crap. I watched them pour goop on ants. I watched them drop rocks on ants. They'd set fire to ants. They'd drown ants. They'd actually go out of their way to maim ants. We had a shooting schedule of 112 days, and 71 of those days were spent killing ants. The crew didn't film anything. They didn't write anything. They would just be killing ants. Oh, the ant manity! This intro brought to you by Marvel's Ant-Man, coming to theaters on July 17th, 2015.
Ah, nice.
Dead ant.
I didn't know there was a tie-in. That's fantastic.
Didn't tell you I was getting these sponsored now.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's good.
I like it. It is Phase 4, which, honestly, that title tells you zip. Like, you really don't... You don't know
it
anything.
It tells you you're in store for four phases of a movie that's going to be like... I forgot about the phases. By the time Phase 2 came around, I totally forgotten about that little gimmick.
Well, Phase 2 came at like 75 minutes into this thing. And I went, we're only to Phase 2? This isn't a two-parter with like an intermission in the middle of it or something, is it?
I immediately kind of like paused Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
You're right.
I immediately paused it to see where I was at. I was like, oh, no, come on. Phase 2, no. It's got to be past the midway mark.
I want to try to explain what the four phases are. I've put a lot of thought into this, and I'm having a hard time. Maybe you guys can help me, but I feel like we need Scott Fletcher.
All right, let's do that first. Fletcher will explain what the hell this movie is. We'll be right back.
Phase 4. When a spate of peculiar activities began to occur in the Arizona desert, scientists Ernest Hubbs and James Lesko investigate and discover a colony of highly intelligent ants, bent on expanding their terrain and on conquering humanity.
Great.
I like the little interstitial there.
Was that? They're conquering humanity. That's their whole goal. Of course, they're ants. Why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they be sitting dormant?
I don't think they were trying to conquer us as much as they were trying to welcome us into the ant fold.
Well, the ending we can get to, but let's explain.
So, you could call that conquering, though. Yeah,
you could.
Right, right.
Randy, go. So get back to the whole, let's talk about the phaseology of the film and what's going on there.
So the movie, anybody who watches this movie has never seen it before. It like starts out. It starts out really trippy, as Brian Dunaway
described. It's like a high school film, and it almost stopped me. It's like a high school film science film thing you would see, and I literally emailed Randy and everybody else 7 minutes in. I'm like, no.
You're like, well, this may be a veto.
Is this what we're watching?
Yeah, it seemed a little precarious for a minute there.
So you have to really like crank your brain back in time and think about what made this worth filming, what made this worth putting together, what were they doing in 1974, and if you do it, there's a story here somewhere, and it's told in these four phases, hence the name, right?
Right.
And the four phases are not equally long, nor are they equally important. But I think phase one is something has happened to the ants and they build some tower mounds that are pretty freaking cool, by the way.
Yeah,
they look like screaming pylons.
Little faces. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they look like almost like organ pipes in a way.
But there should be something on the front of a Pink Floyd album cover.
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Great comparison.
And in 1974, by the way, and so I don't want to get distracted. There's other things to talk about in this movie. But anyway, phase one is just the ants are organizing with more intelligence.
Yeah.
And then phase two is the first sort of encounters between the ants and the humans, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like humans are recognizing something, don't know what, it's very mysterious, and they start to come into conflict, right? Mm-hmm. And then phase three would be the ants going after the humans and sort of destroying them individually. And then phase four would be the ants, they've captured humans and they're turning them on the rest of humanity, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, does that make sense?
I think that makes sense. You did it better than the movie did it, I think.
Right. I would say it's really hard to define those phases, but I think that's pretty spot on. The last phase was the one that probably left the most questions for
me. Because it felt like you're supposed to decide for yourself that basically the people that you've seen have become ant zombies.
Mm-hmm. Right. Are they being injected with venom where they're kind of controlling them within the hive mind, or are they actually animating the bodies like they did with the dead the dead farmhand, where they were actually crawling inside the body.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh, can we just stop there for a second and just tell you that of all the arachnophobias, all the other movies we may have seen with gross moments or things that kind of gave me pause, I don't think anything has gotten to me quite like that hand and those holes in those ants.
Yes, and the hands crawling out of it. That was freaking disturbing. Ooh. Yes.
Because hey, props 1974 for pulling that one off, because that looked really real. And really, really uncomfortable and awful. And I may have the real version of that. Hold on.
Really, really.
There you go, Patrick.
There you go. Very well. But like, yeah, I say, putting yourself in the 1974 mindset is the key to this whole movie, because nowadays you go get a form made of your hand and then you cast it in silicone, right? Mm-hmm. And it looks just like your hand. Mm-hmm. And so then you gouge some holes in it, use a little fake blood, let creatures crawl all over it. And so we're used to that. And we see that on TV shows.
Yeah, or even CGI that thing up, whatever. Whatever your method is, today it's like that's another effect I've seen a million times.
But this was 74, so this is all done with pound cake, right?
Right, and that's the thing. You get into that mindset. You get into that mindset where
Sarah
all
Lee
the
props,
like all the stunts are bad, all the acting is bad, and there's one great thing in this movie, and it's the cinematography, and you're in that mindset, and then when something like this little trick hand comes along, it freaks you out, man. Yeah. I was jumping out of my chair.
Yeah, it was gross. The rest of it didn't really bother me. Like none of the him falling into the pit and getting speed cameraed with a bunch of ants over him didn't freak me out. None of the other attacks against people or the people dying in the poisonous goo, none of that freaked me out. But that hand and those holes and them sitting there and gazing at that for so long.
Right.
Just, ooh, there's something about dying and then, or finding a body. This is one of my freakiest things. If I ever found a body, I'm less worried that it would smell bad or it'd be all bloated or any of those things. I'd be more worried that if I poked it, a bunch of spiders and maggots come crawling out.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, but I think that's probably a real evolutionary fear that we've probably developed going, if you poke a dead something, there's probably going to be weird stuff that's going to fall out.
And bad
stuff.
So
I think that's probably a really good natural fear. Mm-hmm.
And
I think
you know, that's why that visual is so striking. That's why they used it for the movie posters. I mean, it is it's the water cooler next day talk thing that people, you know, back then, they're like, oh yeah, people are going to be talking about this scene, right? This is what's giving us that horror classification. Let's put it on the movie posters.
Yeah,
like, you know, we haven't talked about any of the actors or the director because
we'll get there.
Yeah,
these
guys. There's only really three primary actors, and they've done through stuff, but probably nothing too modern that you'd really.
The Nigel Davenport guy, the very British scientist guy, the hairy, the hairiest of the two. He was all sorts of stagey, you know, like Mr. Traditional trained actor guy, the Michael Murphy guy, whatever. He's done some things. I felt really bad though for Lynn Frederick, who's the girl, very pretty, interesting to look at. She's British and tries to do American here. It's real bad, but she died at 39 of an overdose.
Did you read the rest of her story though?
No, is it?
It's not good. So she, Peter Sellers was married to Britt Eklund, this actress Britt Eklund.
Yeah.
She had kind of a public affair with Rod Stewart.
Oh wow! All right,
exactly. Wow is exactly the right.
that was the proper response.
All right.
So he divorced her.
Uh huh.
And then he married Lynn Frederick, who was way, way, way younger. Than him.
Yeah.
And basically, you know, he was, you know, called a fool for dating a gold digger. And she somehow, and I don't know if she had something to do with it, but basically Peter Sellers' kids, when he died, and he died while he was married to Frederick, but he was in the process of getting a divorce from her.
Mm-hmm.
She got 4.5 million pounds. About $30 million.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And his kids, Sellers' two kids, got about 800 pounds each.
Oh, gosh.
Wow.
Yes. Don't spend that all in one place.
And she, you know, she did lawsuits against the people who did like the Trail of the Pink Panther because it used some outtakes of Peter Sellers. And then she married David Frost.
For all of 17 months.
Right.
That's all she married him for. That's crazy. Yeah.
Just, so she was just insane in real life as she was in the movie. Is that what I'm hearing?
But she's beautiful in this movie. And you look at her and go, wow, okay, I wonder if she did anything else. And then you read these stories about her and dying at 39 of alcohol and drug overdose. It's like, wow, what a life wasted.
So Peter Sellers' daughter,
when this came out, she would have been 20.
She was real young. Yeah, she was playing around 16 or 17. And there's some.
She was playing stupid.
Well, there's some trivia about her wearing one of those breast smasher bras to make her seem younger. And I'm like, okay, I don't know why. Who the hell found that out?
Well, that's in the IMDb trivia.
It is. Yeah, it's one of those that seems a little
suspect.
She's
wearing a breast smasher.
That seems like some kind of pervy dude writing that in IMDb.
Right,
nobody fact checking it. But it's interesting. So Peter Sellers' daughter. Came and saw her 3 weeks before she died and said this. This is a quote. I was so shocked. Lynn was sitting in her kitchen dressed in a filthy kaftan. What's a kaftan?
I don't know, but it was filthy.
She could hardly move, and she was swigging vodka directly from a jug with a handle on the side, like a
so she was,
milk jug.
She was moonshining it then.
Basically, yeah.
Right.
And anyway, I'm reading through here. But yeah, 39, that's pretty young to die. And she's very pretty, very in this movie, just really pretty, kind of has a princess kind of face, like something you'd have in a
dumb innocent
Jennifer Connelly younger.
Yeah, that's about right. Yep, I think that's a good comparison. Anyway,
we could do that with everybody in the movie. So Michael Murphy played the part normally reserved for Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
Yeah, he would later fill that role pretty consistently. even to this day.
So oh, really?
Right. Well, I think he would. I mean, if this movie was made, let's say this movie was made in like 98, let's say.
You mean like the remake?
Is there a remake of this?
Yeah.
Shut up.
For 2002, starring Brian Bosworth and Dean Cain.
What?
Dean Cain?
Yep. Are you kidding me?
Yes, the Boz and the Cain together again at last.
I don't want to freak you guys out, but we may have picked the wrong Phase 4 to watch. That sounds amazing. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Completely not a remake.
Just the same title.
Same title. I mean, you got to come on. Phase 4, I mean, how?
And not just Phase 4, but like Phase IV, just like.
I see. Let's see what Bosworth's up to. Oh geez, there he is. Well, good for them for that.
It was not an actual remake. It was just had the same title.
Okay. Well, right. Saul Bass is the director here. He's known for things. He's done stuff.
This movie.
He's known for this movie.
Oh, wait, what am
I? Well, no. That's not what he's known for.
Yeah, he's known for all kinds of production stuff.
Movie-wise, he's known for directing.
This is primary and last directing, right?
Directing role. But you've seen his artwork like a ton of times. Like he did the Vertigo movie poster, the opening credits to like Psycho, and like all that really cool graphic design stuff. That's what he's known for.
Spartacus is the poster is his. One of the most striking posters ever made.
Death of a Salesman, you know, it's got the body all cut up. Or I'm sorry, Anatomy of a Murder, that's got the body all cut up.
Yeah.
Not Death of a Salesman. There is a Death of a Salesman thing that's similar to that, but that's definitely not it.
Yeah.
That's what I think this movie suffered from, though, is it was very much art film. Mm-hmm. To me.
Oh, totally, dude.
Yeah.
There was nothing about this I felt like was mainstream. There's nothing about this would drive an entire family or group of people to go see this movie. This was like weirdly experimental. The tone of it is that thing that I always tell you guys I hate so much about my childhood in movies. Anytime they did that discordant soundtrack that had no real music to it, I just can't deal with it. It's just so hard for me back then. Now it's like whatever. But when I was a kid, this would have scared the hell out of me as a kid. Not because of the hand would have been something, but just the overall tone and like these long shots of a freaking, like, okay, let's get to that scene. The ant is moving the whatever the hell that was around. Was that a piece of poo? What was the deal with that thing?
Oh, the chunk of the goo that I thought was green
the earwax
when it came out of the.
It was, and then it was yellow later.
And then it turned orange after, I guess, it right.
So he was pushing that one nugget around. He would die because he's in contact with it. Next one would push it around. He would die because he's in contact with it. This is a long, drawn-out thing.
Mm-hmm.
Final ant's barely making it. Gets it over to the queen, who's really played by a wasp, which is funny.
Just thinking about people who haven't seen the movie, who listen to Film Sec and maybe don't watch all the movies.
Yeah.
But we're describing a scene where like several ants carry a piece of goo, earwax, and die. And then another one takes over. Yeah. This
and
not,
it's poison.
It's not animatronic.
These are not puppets.
No. No, these are like little pieces of, I don't know what they were, like potato chips or something.
Yeah.
And then they would like, I don't know how they got them to fall asleep. I assume they didn't poison them.
It was poison. Yeah. They were, the ants were killing themselves moving this thing.
Great.
They were really killing them filming it. I mean, it wasn't like they were doing some kind of movie magic. They were essentially killing the ants.
I figured they were falling asleep. I guess people don't get that worked up over ants, right? That's not a thing where PETA freaks out or do they?
Oh, no.
I don't know.
No, ants are evil.
Know, would it?
No. Ants are evil. Everybody wants ants to die.
So when they get it to the wasp queen, she eats it.
And she goes,
And I guess the point of that is that the queen would that would
she
make
can,
her immune to
she can stomach
it,
and then she can pass make, on the... The antidote.
Right.
She can build a better ant.
That's really dumb.
Can
then.
Withstand that.
Yeah. And it's a movie that thinks it can stand on the cinematography and never cares to explain one thing in the script. Like deploy the yellow. What's yellow? And they never tell you. And then you see it and you have to make assumptions, right? Oh, it's poison.
Yeah.
Right? But you know, for some reason, it kills the old people and not the girl. But okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Like you just keep going, and the movie just keeps going on. It's like we could stop and have one of these scientists who understand what's going on explain this to you, but we'd rather give you some more close-ups of the ants.
Yeah.
No, we'd rather hear one of the scientists talk and show us what sound looks like. It must have been like, he must have just discovered what sound looks like, because he was really passionate about expressing that in the film. Mm-hmm. It was just like, if you explain it to me one more time, I'm going to smack you.
Yeah.
And all right, I want to ask this too, while we're talking about technology and science. Okay, I've heard this a million times, and maybe my simple brain can't figure it out. Math is universal language. But what kind of conversation can you carry on with anything with math? I mean, sure, you both can agree that 1 and 1 is 2, right. But beyond
that's a
prime
number, so that's so he's right? Smart. Yeah, right.
It's a really stupid saying. It's a really dumb saying, because you're absolutely right. Yeah, it's the universal language in that math is constant, and there's 15 ants. I can count 15. If they had the ability to know that they were 15, well, they could count that too. But you're never gonna have it's not like I can even see a kid in the street who's good at math and I'm okay at math, and he and I are going to go beep boop beep boop beep boop beep
5 5 5 6 6 5
right beep, it's beep, stupid beep, beep, beep. To computers maybe, but not to human
well
beings.
Zeros and ones, that's binary, that makes that's the, you know, that makes sense, but there's conditionals around all of that, and it just didn't make much sense to me. It never has made much sense to me, the whole math is, I wish somebody would explain it to me in a really long email and send it to Scott.
So languages have ciphers, right?
Right.
So it's actually incorrect to say math is a universal language. Mm. Math is a universal syntax, maybe.
Right.
But you need ciphers in order to understand what the hell this string of things represents.
This faxed picture of a olive, the one that the ants sent.
Yeah, that's
right.
Are they wanting to have martinis? What do they want?
Yeah.
There was a point where I started getting mad at the movie. because it wasn't telling a story anymore. It was just like, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but they really loved shooting these guys inside this facility with all of this stuff there. They would put the camera between a bunch of stuff and focus it short. And then they'd put the actors just past some other stuff that was out of focus. Then they'd put even more stuff past that was also out of focus.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
visually,
they'd run,
it was appealing.
Right. They'd push the focus over to the actors. And then it would be there. And then you'd have this depth of field where there was blurry in the foreground and blurry in the background. And watching this movie, I'm just like, what are they trying to? They're not telling a story visually. They're just having fun. This will be pretty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They did that.
And that's the reason why Saul Bass never tricked it again.
Well, here's the deal with Saul Bass. Just another quick note about this guy. And you don't really associate him with these things, but here are some of the famous logos he designed. So he's not just doing film credits and titles and all
posters
that.
Posters and
Quaker Oats, AT&T.
Did he design the character itself?
Yeah.
The
yes.
Quaker Oats dude?
The original one, which was not based on like the photo one you see now. It was like a more of a 2D kind of shadowy art thing, but it's very similar. United Artists, Kleenex, Warner Communications.
Does Kleenex have a logo?
Bell, the old Bell South
it's
logo.
It's a curly handwriting-y font.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
Fuller O'Brien, the Playboy logo, IBM. Like,
wow.
He's the dude had.
Dixie, United Airlines.
He was the logo
fantastic.
Man.
Fantastic artist, and I want to emphasize that this is a true film that we watched. Now, we watch a lot of movies on Film Sack, but this was film.
That's kind of we do on Film Sack, by the way, is watch a lot of movies.
Movies for the most part, but film, emphasis on film.
Yeah.
This guy wanted to do some experimentation. And
at times, it was like a teenager who had discovered a macro lens. At other times it was like, oh wow, I wonder if anybody ever shot something that way before, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is when you combine those two, it drags the good down.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see if this has ever been successful in mainstream movies. You guys, can you think of anything
this kind of alternating between actors and documentary nature footage?
Right.
No.
Because we saw frogs and that was way worse. No.
Maybe as arty stuff, like there's bound to be some.
Tree,
like we're just finishing
Terrence Malick, Tree of Life.
Tree of Life was a bit like that. Terrence Malick's always a bit like that. But
yeah.
But like
horrible.
I
cannot stand that damn movie.
So Sundance just finished they're just finishing their stuff. And I shouldn't say that's going all week. But anyway, it's all happening here and everyone's all raving about certain films. But inevitably there are like hundreds of movies that try to come to Sundance that people end up seeing that are kind of in this vein, like extremely like we're really pushing the envelope, and you know, all the whole movie is looking at an orange on a table and it never moves or whatever. Like, that kind of stuff, I think, is always with us. Someone always thinks they're being clever in that way. Mm-hmm. Right. Most of the time, I think that's just kind of a big bucket of bullshit. You know, like when somebody says, I was watching this documentary that Amazon's put out, that, what's it called? The New Yorker thing. It's like a version of their magazine, but video. It's all documentary stuff. They have the pilot up there, and I watched that, and the whole middle section is this interview with this performance artist lady whose name I forget, but she's been around forever, been doing it since the 50s or something, and she's still doing stuff. And one of her pieces in 2011 was her sitting in a chair in a big room that 400,000 people flocked to and sold out the tickets and waited in line forever to see. And the way that the thing went is she sat for 7 hours at a time in a chair wrapped in a blanket, staring straight ahead and never moving. And everybody else would come, and they, and if you got lucky, you could sit in the chair opposite her and stare at her face. And they would start tearing up as they would do this. They would start crying as they would stare at this lady. Now, I am all about freedom of expression. I'm all about artistic expression and its varied forms and types. That was a bunch of shit from top to bottom. And part of that is, oh, well, she's avant-garde in the past, therefore she's a thing, therefore if I sit in the chair long enough, I'll probably cry or whatever. I don't know. But I, my point is, if Brian Ibbett told me, hey, part of the FilmSack Arts, we're starting a new show called FilmSack Arts.
The farts.
Brian Ibbett is going to go to the mall, and he's going to hang upside down on one of the railings on the upper floor of the mall and just do that for 4 hours at a time. And it's going to be the most artistic expressed thing you've ever heard of in your life. I would say, no, it isn't. That's Brian Ibbett doing a thing for a thing's sake.
That's Chris Angel.
No, and I'd be all like, give me my scarf. I got to go see this.
Yeah, well, maybe. But this movie is a bit like that for me. Randy's right. They stopped telling a story. And maybe it's because your director is a guy whose stories are told in single, very striking images. And now he's being told to do that over a, you know, 84-minute period and stretch that out. And maybe he just couldn't do it. Or maybe this succeeded wildly, like the lady in that weird thing I saw, and I don't understand.
You know? I think it popped in and out of so many different art languages. I think it would be hard for anyone, unless they were well-versed in all of those art languages, somebody like Saul Bass, who could really enjoy the interpretation. If I watch this film, you know, several more times and really try to get into all the references and stuff, I'm sure I probably could find some way to appreciate it more, but just at a surface level, it's things that are called
art that actually show, or that are so confusing that because you can't make sense of it, it must be art. I hate that.
All right. So I want to agree with you, but I just want to extend something that you're saying. So art, to call something art, there has to only be two components, right?
Yeah.
One, it's made by a guy. Yeah. It has to be man-made.
Wait, a guy. Wait, why has it got to be a guy?
It has to be human-made.
All right. Okay. Lady or man, sure.
And so that is an alteration of the natural state of things somehow.
All right.
And it attempts to or should succeed in altering someone's thinking as they observe it, as they hear it, see it, taste it, whatever.
Yeah.
That's it. Two things.
Tweak an emotion.
It's made by a person, and it changes someone's mental state.
If the mental state is I'm irritated that it got called art and is this huge thing and 400,000 people waited, then it's art. I guess it's art.
That's the thing. It's actually kind of cool. That's a really elegant concept that there are people who consider that pile of cow dung that was carefully arranged on that white surface and put into a museum art. And when they see it, they feel revulsion or whatever. They go tell their friends, you got to come see this. I can't believe what it did to me. And Scott Johnson is perfectly free to stand back and point and say, those people are freaking stupid.
Mm-hmm. No, because for me, it's like somebody saying, you know, okay, I'll use another example. Randy, we're all in Irvine. We're hanging out. And I'm not saying this really happened. I'm saying, let's say we did. And Randy is running through the street just saying, hey, watch this, you guys. I'm just going to throw Skittles everywhere. I'm throwing Skittles everywhere. Skittle at you, Skittle at me, Skittle at everything. Because Skittles. It's my artistic idea today is to throw Skittles everywhere. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that works. You know what I mean?
So now we get to the definition of art that works. Art that is art. And that would be what Scott Johnson's talking about, which is if I perceive that anyone could do this, anyone could think of this and do it, and it doesn't really move me, it just feels like common, then I start to say that's not really art.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to say this about this movie, because just to go from grumpy, limp-hand, old man, hairy man to, oh, another ant died trying to move the poop. Right.
I'm gonna come back to what I said, which I think this movie contains art. And I think in parts of it, it is beautiful and brilliant and maybe some of the best filmmaking in certain areas I've seen from this era. But as a whole,
you really believe that about this movie? Like it shows.
Oh man, there's some shots inside that is just, you know, like Randy said with the cinematography. It's beautiful. And I mean it's some really good looking stuff. And
but did you ever just go, hold on, oscilloscopes can't do those 12 things you just made one do? Did you ever feel like that?
It was kind of amazing some of the things those things were doing.
So that was
pretty good technology.
A couple of things from the trivia, and I apologize if you were going to get
to these. No, go ahead, please do.
It's the very first film to ever depict a crop circle.
Yeah, that's true.
That is amazing.
And in fact, it's 2 years ahead of people making crop circles in the UK and starting to call them crop circles.
And it's truly a crop circle. I mean, it's not crop. Right. It's not crop concentric rings get now. It's a circle with a square in it.
Yeah,
yeah.
I love that they both like kept it to themselves until you know the tea kettle boiled over later on. They both admitted that it was like a turning point for both of them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. It took a weird while. Scenes. Anyway, yeah. Continue,
so,
Randy.
In October 2011, Argentine director Nicholas Goldbart described Phase 4 as having a profound cinematic influence on him. Now, that's the only guy. Like, that's the one person in the universe for whom that was the case.
But, I think there's bits in this movie.
You're really hanging yourself out on a limb saying this had a profound impact on me as a filmmaker. Wow.
Well, I've heard some say, I mean, in the aftermath of us doing the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie from the 90s, I've had people say it was the single most influential thing in their entire life was that movie.
Right.
And once again, I come down
I
to like,
don't stop ordering pizza since.
It's because people are 10 or 12. They don't. That's when your neural pathways are being burned. Everything is intense, including your movies you're seeing. There's just no way around that. So if you went and saw that at the perfect day when your hormones were at the perfect level and you're about to hit puberty and whatever, it's just boom. Hey. It hits you like Star Wars hit me or like anything else hits any other generation. And so it's possible, I suppose, that somebody was watching Phase 4 and just had an out-of-body experience. It's possible.
Unlikely, but possible.
Yeah, possible.
It could have happened.
Yeah. Possible.
Are we just going to spend the whole show not talking about the threesome contamination shower scene?
Oh, my God.
Oh,
it's
right.
Stuck in there.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
What the hell?
It's all stripped down, and we'll strip down this 16-year-old girl and take a decontamination shower with her.
Decontamination. Yeah.
Decontamination
and
shower.
Just, and they're all just facing forward like the cast of Seinfeld or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're on an elevator.
Yeah.
It's all very weird. In fact, the whole thing, the relationship with the girl, I just found
the
creepy.
Sexual tension. This is something that's typical of I would say of more artistic kind of thinking. They bring in this ageless love kind of thing, mm-hmm. whereas most people would never even think about, you know, a 40-year-old dude and this 16-year-old lady. But for some reason, in that artistic realm, it seems like it's, I don't know, more taboo and they want to explore it or something.
Well,
I feel like Saul Bass was trying to kind of say there's some sexual tension here, but he really didn't talk about it until the very last scenes.
I was going to say, pays it off or gets to it at the end or addresses it at the end.
He's like, I'm getting to it.
Yeah, he'll
settle down, folks.
Yeah, it's like the AT&T logo. It takes a while. It's got to sink in.
Oh, that's a planet.
Oh, I see.
Ooh, FedEx has an arrow in it. Because they get it there.
Weren't we all just talking? I swear we just talked about this on another show, but the little 70s spy camera. Did we talk about the little 70s spy camera?
Oh, yeah, I love the spy camera.
When he pulled that out, I got all excited. I think I may have made an audible yelp when I saw it, because I thought one of
those.
But then
they take these pictures and they go back to this truck with this huge camper cover.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait a minute, why couldn't they have brought more camera equipment? Why is he confined to something that could fit in your breast pocket?
Yeah, something
these dudes are hipsters,
smaller than a pack of cigarettes, which is saying something in the 70s. These movies, I guess they just weren't afraid of being a little slow and taking their time and not necessarily. Like, we hadn't gotten, you know, Spielberg hadn't yet laid out the what would be the standard for first, middle, and third act for some time to come.
And then Michael Bay hadn't yet trashed that.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great thing to mention, because I don't even know where we are now. Where are we now? Like, what is this now that we're in? Because I feel like now is something else.
We're in visual overload.
I guess, like, so.
We're looking back two generations of modern films, right? And in Phase 4, you're supposed to sit and look at everything on the screen. Mm-hmm. And they give you time to cast your eyes around and see all the farm and to notice that this guy is filling a trough with gasoline from six drums of fuel at the same freaking time.
Yeah. We call this fire ditch. We got it.
That'll keep the ants out.
If they make it across the water, we're going to burn them.
And the lady who died. So we got a body count of four, according to the trivia. So we got the old lady, the old man.
The farmhand died.
The farmhand, his wife, the farmer.
I don't think they count the horse.
They killed the horse.
The farmer killed the horse, right? Because
yeah,
that was,
shot him.
They
yeah.
shot him.
I'm just saying, I don't think this trivia is counting horses. I think it's only counting people.
Because it's pivotal. That girl spends the rest of the movie. I think she allows herself to get captured and zombified by the ants because they killed her horse.
Okay.
I'm going to go with you there.
Okay, we got to talk about that. So the ending, I don't mean to jump ahead here, but
no,
what happened exactly? Because I'm still kind of don't
know. Hey, let's
jump
around. That's what Saul did.
I don't know what's happening. This is being told from the perspective of a pervy man. So he's telling it as if it happened, right?
Right. So the ants do their little diagram. We want her. And you know, she comes
we
out there.
I
honestly, when I saw that, I thought, oh, there must be something in the crop circle. That looks like the crop circle shape.
Yeah.
But it did not pay off. I was really hoping that those our treasure is buried right there under a dead lamb.
So the ants trick her into giving herself up to save the others. And why? Why does she do that? Because they killed her horse.
Yeah.
That's a key pivot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where was you going with your point, Ibbett?
Well, yeah. same kind of thing. So she goes out. Oh, yeah. So she goes out there. Ants drag her back, I guess, back to the pit of full-sized body.
the dirt.
that they've prepared.
Right.
And I guess possess her mind. The queen possesses her mind and think that they can coax the other. I don't. Freaking
okay, let's say that's happened. Let's say, and I'm going to go with what you have.
She's the new queen.
Why did I offer
right?
to try to explain?
No, no. I like this. Let's say the queen has now got control over the girl. I'm fine with that. She's now living in the sand or whatever the hell that was.
Sure.
So she rises out of the sand. Pervy 45-year-old freaking scientist man shows up. He's now with her, and now they've joined whatever, and now they're going to whatever they're going to do together. But right. here's
they've joined.
They're
going to
populate the world.
Right? It's Ant Scientology, and they've joined it. Okay, right. So if they've done that, this is where it breaks for me. I'm fine with all that, and other movies have done that, and I'm okay with nobody winning at the end. I like that. I'm down with that. But except the ants, I guess. I guess they won. But the part that I can't get my head around is he is telling this story as if it's 10 years later, and he's, as I recollect, the ants then did this and that. Well, no, you're now one of the zombie men, ants, whatever. Right. And you're with the girl, you can't pretend like you're just reminiscing this story to your children or your grandchildren later. You are in the middle of it being zombified into a drone or whatever.
The movie only works really, you know, in its current format only works as a with a narrative like that, right? So you need a narration. Mm-hmm. He's in the script and the way they wrote it, he's the only technically real male survivor, the only scientist survivor. So they have to end it vaguely like that so that they can keep the narration so that they can make sense of the first half of the movie.
I guess.
So I'm assuming you guys ever see Ratatouille? You ever see Ratatouille?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Remember the scene where
you're
the
talking
Ratatouille-
about it like it's some black and white thing from our parents' day.
Remember the scenes
indie film.
Remember the scenes when Patton Oswalt the rat is on top of the cook guy, and he's like steering him around with the hair and stuff. Yeah. That's what I kind of imagine happening. The queen ant is on the girl's head, and she's kind of like pulling the strings. And I was expecting to use that macro camera one more time and close up, and they kind of did because they put this spot on the hand at the end and overlays the
right.
and overlays of the head and that kind of stuff. So
okay.
I figured we was going somewhere in that direction.
Great comparison. The only thing I hate about Ratatouille is that you couldn't possibly control somebody by getting fistful of their hair while you're under their hat.
Mm-hmm.
And it bugs me because it's asking for too much magic.
Well, the thing is that they have some weird sort of nerve damage that, like, you know, when you, a reflex thing when the doctor taps you on your knee and your knee kicks forward.
True story.
The guy that Ratatouille's sitting on. has this weird nerve damage that he got.
Remy.
Yeah.
Brian.
Remy. That's right. Oh, Remy's the rat.
Remy's the rat. Yeah.
Yeah, because the rat's been chewing on his nerves in his head.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, stop it.
He caused the nerve damage. This explains it.
Nerve damage.
Wow. Well, it's.
But I was interested to see that there wasn't a lot of theory on the internet, which tells me people just didn't feel like coming up with a theory.
I don't think anyone's seen the damn thing. Like, I would be shocked if our listeners, I know a bunch watch them before we do the episodes, which is great, and people should keep doing that, but this, I'll bet I could pull every single listener, all 30,000 people that'll hear this show, plus however many later on archive, I'll bet none of them can honestly say they've seen it before today.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be shocked if they did. And if they did, it was like some accidental, it was on, you know, the weird
Saturday thing. I was having
Saturday
fever dreams and I had the TV on, I couldn't. Reach the remote to turn it off.
Sure. So I my guess is the reason there's not a lot of sort of extemporaneous theories is because this just was under all radar of any kind.
It's 1974, so I mean, it's not like there were blogs in 74. I mean,
well, no, but you had all kinds of things in those years where people will still talk about them now because they have some sort of lasting impact, but I just don't think this had any impact on anyone, maybe because it just didn't get seen. Like, who did this make any money? I don't know.
No, it did not. It was an abysmal failure.
Okay. Well,
I'm curious. I'll have to ask George because George was all into the whole 70s monster movies and quote unquote horror stuff from this decade. And this would have been something that he would have watched on like the syndicated matinee local channel kind of thing.
Right.
And I'll have to see if he's seen it.
This was an early episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000 when they were only on one TV station.
Hmm. Oh, really?
Which was KTMA. Wow. Their first, whatever, two dozen episodes or something were you know, all locally produced by KTMA for airing on this one station, and this was one of them.
Hmm.
Interesting.
So am I wrong to feel like this is just one of those? Like, I feel like Netflix has their, whatever their contracts are, their allotments. It's like, all right, we get the Avengers for 6 months. We get this whatever. Okay, you still need 10... shitty things. Where do you want to put those, Netflix?
I don't think Netflix pays anybody for anything that they don't think people want to see. And there is a cult classic aspect to this film.
Mm,
totally.
Like when you look around, like if you look at Rotten Tomatoes or you look, it's not empty. There are people who are talking about this movie over the last decade even.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, yeah. There's just not as many... With so many questions in a movie like this, you would think there would be a lot of theories mm-hmm. that were being thrown around and breaking down the phases. I mean, the fact that Randy had to go through and try to identify the phases without Googling it is, you know,
well,
says a lot.
There wasn't anything to Google. I'm not saying it's such a cult classic that there's lots of, you know,
there's been no serious film study on this thing is what I'm saying.
Mm. Right. Okay, I'm watching. So I'll give you here's an interesting insight into modern society. This is kind of unrelated, but you guys made me think of it. Last night, I'm tuned in just briefly to the Paul and Storm performance at PAX South, and they were on stage, and I was curious because I haven't seen them live since they performed at Nerdtacular here in Salt Lake, and they, you know, I wondered, oh, they have a bunch of new stuff in their set. Like, what are they playing now? Whatever. I was just curious. So I get in there, and they led off with a George R. R. Martin, Keep Writing Your Book song, which surprised me. But I'm watching that, and they're doing their thing on stage, and I'm reading the Twitch chat, mm-hmm. and the Twitch chat was full of more theories and controversies in about 5 minutes than this movie has in its entire lifetime. And I mean, like, hey,
like Game of Thrones.
No, it was like these guys were going, no, it wasn't that at all. It was about the band. One of them said, isn't that one of the Rooster Teeth guys? I think it is. And another guy said, I think one of those guys was a Mickey Mouse club member.
Former Musketeer.
Yeah. And then somebody else. And overall, it was real trolly and mean, of to be course, honest. People were being real dicks.
Pack South, man.
It was.
You know saying? The Pack South crowd.
Online.
Yeah, the viewer crowd. The Twitch crowd is the freaking worst. Anyway, they were just. They were just had all these theories about who these guys were and what they were doing and saying, oh, I think I saw them open for.
Oh my God.
It's like all these bands and
the Stones at Altamont.
Yeah. Like, what do you guys do? What is this I'm witnessing? And I had to get out of there. It's like, this is terrible. Right. So it's just funny that we live in a time now where all you have to do is walk. Like, you could have a video of, I don't know, Kanye West walking somewhere and his left foot might turn in a little bit as he took one step and the internet will immediately have 4,000 theories as to why his foot did that. I heard he has MS. I hear it's because of this or the other thing. I hear because his shoes are funny and he's going to sue Nike until they're dead. Like, that's where we live now. And I don't know if I like that as much as in 74 when you could make a weird movie like this and no one really talked about it that much. Yet a few people are like, did you see that? Yeah, the ants are cool. Done. Go have dinner. You know what I mean? Like, there's a it's a simpler thing. Everybody has to have a breakdown. No wonder we're so conspiracy theoried out on the internet. Right. No wonder, dude. Because everyone thinks that Storm from Paul and Storm was on the Mickey Mouse Club. All right, anyway. There's that. Wow. There's that.
I got Mildred all chained up.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. chained up in the house.
Let's see. The green stuff we talked about. Dude, ants crawling out of the handholds. What else is going on?
This is the first time I've ever watched a movie and only written down one trope.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing.
There weren't a lot of, well.
What do you got? The oscilloscope one's a trope for me, but anyway.
Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah.
For me, it was, if we can show you something, we can blow it up. Mm-hmm. This movie was just like, it didn't know what to do with all of the different things that were constructed, the towers of ants, the old truck, like just everything. We're going to blow this shit up. Mm-hmm. And it got to where I started expecting the ants to just be able to blow up anything at will.
You know? They pretty much were able to, except for that one time with the praying mantis. It tried to stop it, but guess what? We had a watcher ant, and he took care of that situation right quick.
That was really, and that was
drop
him
out of the coils of the air conditioning.
That was much easier than chewing through the wire.
And plus, the bug life is so gross, dude. Like the close up of the half alive ant being eaten up to its torso by a freaking praying mantis is just so gross.
So Tina's in the room watching. Well, no, looking at her iPad, doing something while I'm watching this. And I go, oh, that's gross. And she looks up and it's just, you know, like shots of ants with dirt falling on them, right? Mm-hmm. I said, no, you missed it. I got to go back.
You missed the good stuff.
And I went back to the single shot they have of a rock dropping on a big bloated ant. And this thing erupts like a Oxy-10 commercial. Like,
right.
This shower of goo comes spilling out of this ant. It's like, oh, my God. That's horrible. Mm. And it's so much of that in this movie. Like watching bugs fight is freaky.
Yeah.
It ain't really. They don't freaky. Like each other. They're not nice.
It's a terror. No, imagine being, I know movies have tried to do this and I think failed because I don't think you can truly grasp it, but just imagine being at their scale where their weight and movement matters in a way that doesn't feel so papery and light. And what that would really be like. That is a violent freaking space, man. Like it is like most of the natural world. It is nasty what goes on, and I can't even imagine it. Like, give me a movie. They need to make a new movie that's really visceral, where I am shrunk down to the size of like an ant, and what that's like. I guess Ant-Man might do that. I don't know.
That is totally going to do that. That's a good call, Scott.
I'll be disappointed if it doesn't do that.
I hope it does that because they've never done that right. I feel like the Incredible Shrinking Man trope never has been truly fully realized. Marvel has an opportunity.
I mean, I Shrunk the Kids didn't do it for you.
No. Right. No.
Inner Space, nothing?
Oh,
nothing?
Inner Space. That's
Inner
great,
Space kind of did, but that was incredible, like, but that was like microbial. Journey. Those are microbial stories, you know? I'm talking like, put me on the scale of something somebody could see and smush. Not
not so microscopic that you need a magnifying glass.
Yeah. I mean,
Yeah. And there's four kinds of small things in this movie. There's ants, there is a spider, there's a mouse, and there's a mantis.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of those, when you get up close, is terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And that mouse died, didn't it? And I think Pete'd have something to say with that.
Jeez, yeah.
These days.
I think they probably killed the sheep, too. In the name of movie.
You think so?
In the name of movie.
Those holes, I didn't like the holes it had. I think there were ants in those holes.
Yeah, there were. That was disgusting. He gets up close to that sheep, and there's holes in the sheep. And
It looked like three.
So even if they didn't kill the sheep, they did drill it.
Sheep hole.
Guys, we have to shoot this scene. I need three sheep holes stat.
So I'll tell you the other thing I wrote down that I don't really consider a trope, and that's the minimalist cast. You know, there's really only three people in this movie. You could combine all the others and not get up to a fourth person. I was trying to think of a movie that that I like that's more minimalist than this.
Yeah,
in terms of cast. Yeah, Moon comes to mind, but
Castaway a little bit.
I hate Castaway.
I love Castaway.
And it got me thinking about as you reduce down. As you reduce down further and further, you know, like from Breakfast Club down to, I don't know,
Devil in the Elevator.
Hey, oh, what's Devil's the Will Smith business? What's the
I Am Legend?
I Am Legends like that.
Yeah, yeah. The Paranormal Activity movies always seem to have only a couple people.
Mm-hmm. Blair Witch.
Sure. Yeah. That was like three of them.
Yeah, but you're asking a lot of, you know, and then I realized the movie Alien has seven people in it. Great movie.
Yeah, what a movie.
Very limited cast. Yeah. They all have to carry a lot of weight.
Yeah. That's 70 movies horror done right, man, in every way. Like, that's got the stuff we like about 70s horror, but it just is so, so iconic. The Chestburster. I mean, forget about all the movies that came from it. It's hard to not include those, but if you just look at it, that movie on its own merits, it's freaking fantastic.
Right.
Oh my
gosh.
Let's
we never that. And we and Alien, we never try to feel for the alien, maybe in later series, but in Alien, there was none of that. Whereas Saul was kind of always trying to get us to feel something for the ants. I was feeling like, did you guys get a feeling that he's like
a little bit?
We're trying to humanize these guys.
That's why you make the scientist, you know, a little bit of the bad guy where he's, oh no, of course I called the base. Yeah. Yeah. No, you know, this, let's turn this, sound machine up to 11 and really fry.
Oh my gosh. The sound machine. I forgot about that. How in 1974, if you were at a movie theater, would you not just walk out? Because I'm at home in my living room and that thing goes on for a good 3 minutes. And
all
I had
the
to
animals
turn it down.
Here were going ape crap.
My TV volume goes, the loudest I've ever put it at is 50. It tends to live between 25 and 35. I take it down to 20 when my 5-year-old's trying to sleep and down from there. I had it at 25 watching this thing. And when that sound started, and that sound goes on for 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Is it eight minutes? I knew it was a long time.
Yeah. I took it from 25% volume down to 10% volume. Mm. I don't understand. I guess I'm not listening to the movie during that whole section. Mm. Right? Like, if there's any dialogue, I'm not going to hear it.
No, you won't hear it.
It would be effective if you were forced to watch it. But I mean, if you're paying for a movie and you got 8 minutes of squealing noise that you can't quiet down, I'm leaving.
Right. Yeah.
Christopher Nolan all of a sudden puts that noise into the next movie. Right. He makes him walking out.
That'll be the end of that. Yeah. That's some Inception I don't want a piece of. Hello, friends. Let me break in here for a moment and remind you that today's episode of Film Sack is brought to you by the fantastic people at Audible, where you can get over 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature. Not just fiction, not just nonfiction, but also periodicals. All of it. At your greedy, ear-like fingertips or something. Anyway, I want you guys to go check out the amazing books. There's so many on there about filmmakers and film, especially in the nonfiction category. So if you're really into movies and that's part of the reason you like coming and listening to FilmSack, well then, by gum, they've got you taken care of in that category as many others. I love fantasy. I love science fiction. Oh, man, there's so much there. It's kind of ridiculous. We'd like you to get a free book on us today. Thanks to Audible, and you can do that by going to audiblepodcast.com/filmsack. That's audiblepodcast.com/filmsack. Do it today. Well, I got some clips here that may explain a lot.
I hope you don't have clips of that.
Niall, I might. Let's find out. Let's find out together whether I have those or not. All right, here is... that's not going to work unless I put that right there. Okay, here is the beginning, which is ants doing weird stuff. Here you go.
Ordinary ants of different species. We're doing things ants don't do. Meeting. Communicating. Apparently making decisions.
Going to Hooters.
Going to Hooters. Playing.
Seeing movies.
Playing five-card stud.
Yeah. What else could they be doing? Cleaning up the yard. Buying sex toys.
Giving each other back rubs.
I don't know why I said creepy. Sex toys.
Getting together to watch Downton Abbey.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I've got to catch up on that thing. All right,
ants
here's
never do that.
Something with, I know, right? That's when you really know something's wrong, because ants never watch Downton Abbey. Are you kidding me? They don't care what's going on downstairs. All right, here's the science nerds. Whoops, here you go.
Look, I'm sorry. I'm strictly a pencil and paper guy. I wouldn't know the front end of a whale from a hole in the ground.
Yes, you would. You'd know the difference.
Come on.
Hole in the ground.
You just basically spend 10 minutes explaining how all these horizontal lines, I mean, go left, go right.
Yeah.
You're explaining logo programming language.
Yeah. And then you're going to go to SeaWorld and go, hey, is that a hole in the ground?
No,
that's the front end of a whale, you dumbass.
Right.
All right.
Didn't they ask that same question last week in arachnophobia? Wasn't that also a question?
Probably.
How many times? That gets asked almost every week. I think you should capture that every time.
And it's not always the same words, but I know what you mean. It can be like, oh man, I don't know the difference.
It's so that the audience has a fool to relate to and say, oh, he's as dumb as me about this whole topic. I sure hope they explain things to him.
Yeah, the whole world needs a fool, Brian. That's what they say. Here's one about city folk. Oh, I hate this trope. It's a trope. So here's the old farmer man.
Well, I wouldn't know about that. I didn't really get to know those people. They were city folk, maybe.
Oh, I don't get to know people who are city folk, then.
Never
is that
did
it?
Much book learning.
We wouldn't have anything in common, me and those city folk. Right. I hate that. All right, here's, I don't know what this is.
Let's see some activity!
Oh, I just like the way he said that.
Oh, yeah, I love that one.
That's a good one.
That's a good multi-purpose audio.
Let's see some activity!
All right.
Now, that was where he was out and he was blowing up the pylons with
the monoliths.
The gun.
Right. Yeah. For no reason. Awesome. Just to get them going. Kicking the dirt.
Yeah. And then,
right.
later,
and then
like,
later on.
We think you ought to blow up the pylons. Right? Yeah. Chip chop. Great idea. Yes. Okay. He was terrible on the radio.
Later on, Star Command called in and they were all like, you should disturb the pylons. He's like, oh, I've already done that.
Yeah. But he lied to him again.
Would you send me more grenades?
Right.
The guy was such a liar. All right, here's some sweet techno babble that sounds real dumb now in retrospect.
Now I take my ant signals, I run them through the digitizer. I record them on tape, I write them down, and I search for a correlation between what they say and what they do.
I take my ant signals, you see.
Okay, so I'm with him right up to the point where he writes them down.
Yeah.
What is he writing down? He's digitized.
He has pencil and he's drawn all that long printer paper.
Yeah. He just I like to make charts. Sound.
I think digitize means something different then.
Yeah.
I don't think it meant the same. I think digits meaning like numbers or something else.
He was using punch cards. You got to remember it's a totally different time.
Yeah. It wasn't like we scanned it in and now it's a 3D model I'll keep on my hard drive. I think it was something else. I don't know. That stuff was bull crap.
The whole thing. Like, what's powering that facility out in the middle of the desert?
Power, apparently.
Sweat and chest hair. That's what.
And then the ants figure out a way to make mirrors and focus the mirrors on the lab.
Yeah.
Right?
Which ant was in charge of smoothing those things out? Because that's a low-level laser. Yeah, I mean, that's what that is.
Yeah.
Well, they got it, when you see a close-up of it, it's little crystals. It's like retsin that they're pointing at the...
retsin.
Wow. They're finding retsin in the dirt.
And we stack this retsin like this, and you do one to a 90-degree angle, and then...
Yeah. Yeah,
I know math. Let's talk.
Okay, so it's sand. So they make it into glass. They make mirrors. The ants make mirrors. Yeah. Then the ants have to keep turning the mirrors all day long.
Yeah,
to keep the focus on the left. That's ridiculous.
Well, they would if the director had thought about that. Yeah. But apparently, they put in exactly right spot that it's always going to be reflected.
You got to keep that queen happy. Is all I'm saying.
That's right.
All right, here's
happy queen happy.
Keep her farting purple eggs.
Exactly. They seem real broken up about this news. Here's this.
People are dead back there.
Yes.
tragedy. Yeah. I don't understand it. They accepted the order. Why should they come here?
Well, you turned it on, you jerk. He's the one that killed him.
They didn't know that people were coming there.
No.
That was a pure accident.
He should have some remorse for his accident.
That's what I was, and that was what I think we're supposed to feel. This guy's a total jerk. Because that's what, they were just walking around like, oh, dead farmer, bummer. Mm-hmm. Hey, look over here, is his dead farmer's wife. She's dead.
Aunt bit him, and maybe I misheard this or didn't hear it, but when the aunt bit him and his hand turned into the horrible hand, did they explain that? Was it just a normal ant?
Just the rest of the movie, his hand keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, because they're ants. They're ant eggs, and they're hatching, and they're growing in his hand.
Ew. I didn't think of that.
I think they were supposed to be saying these were special ants. They had an advanced poison that would only take one to kill us.
You got that impression, but the whole movie, right. I'm just thinking, there's a part of this guy that's turning into the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man.
Yeah.
The whole movie.
Yeah, that didn't look good.
You couldn't hide it.
Here's Meet the Girl, okay? So this is most of her dialogue right here.
You sort of had a close call out there, didn't you? How do you feel?
Well, I'm ready to go home now.
Okay, I'm ready to go home now, she says.
Go home. There's a couple spots, where you brought this up at the beginning where her British accent comes shining through.
Yeah, big time. It was really hard. And it's funny because the trivia said the director was so picky about making sure she didn't sound British that he made her redo all this dialogue. And I'm like, well, the final cut, she still sounds British as shit.
Mm-hmm. This is shit. I like that. Hey,
way to go, Mr. Del Monte logo creator.
Hey,
what
was she special or what?
The first time Brian Dunaway goes,
was she special or what? Because when we first introduced her character, first of all, she's at the farmer's house and she's not really saying anything. She's just riding around on the horse, just kind of oogling everybody. And then once Professor One and Professor Two are on their way out and they're like clearly out of view, she's on her horse waving at them.
I think she was country special.
Some kind of special, man.
Yeah. I think that's a fair way to say it.
Yeah.
She's a little slow.
Not much for city folk.
Yeah, no.
Not much for your high class bug talk.
Yeah, your book learning.
But I just died laughing when the professors kind of like left the scene and it was just her sitting on the horse waving at the cameraman about 20 foot off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Real dumb.
Hey.
See you. Hey.
All right, this next clip sounds legit.
You haven't contacted any civilians, have you?
No.
Not only had he contacted civilians, he'd killed them.
Yeah. Right. So was it the pause that gave him away, or was it him doing it almost as a question, or what part of his guilt really shows? But no, I didn't contact any locals.
He sounds like Krieger from Archer.
He totally does. Oh, I got to hear that
you
again.
You haven't contacted...
Here he is.
No.
Yeah. All right, there's that accent.
You need contact.
This guy's got I will give it to Nigel. What's his name? He had a cool accent, and here's a big piece of it.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Oh, wrong one.
What do you do here?
Yeah, there's a British accent.
Just a little.
I have no idea.
Research into statistical probabilities.
Check out the statistical probability of my erection.
Do math.
Do you have any tea? I mean Coca-Cola.
Oh, here's the one I meant. Here it is.
We are faced with a power that has appeared and is exerting itself. We have the opportunity to study it, to learn from it, to teach it its limitations. We can, in a word, educate it.
I don't understand, Kirk. Why won't you and your crew comply?
So much chatnering.
Yeah.
That's two words, dude.
In a word. You could have captured 2/3 of his dialogue and it would have been Shatnering. It was all Shatnering. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was pretty. Yeah. It reminded me of a villain on Star Trek or someone on Star Trek who's got. They're on some planet. Kirk's down there visiting. The guy has figured out how to mine some awesome crystal, freaking rare mineral, and it's killing people and turning them old. And Kirk's like, we need to shut it down. But this guy is convinced that they can go for. That's exactly what this character is.
Now, I want to make it clear. I don't think Shatnering is necessarily bad.
I think
I think it was very entertaining in this movie, the way he delivered his dialogue.
Yeah, he yells things like,
we can, in a word, educate it.
Educate it is two words. You're right. He screwed that up.
Two words.
In a word, in two words, in, okay, in two paragraphs.
In a word, followed by another word.
Another
educate
word.
Educate them.
A total of three syllables. I hope you're
let
prepared.
Let me see. In a word. Very good.
All right, so
educate
this,
it.
I didn't want to do this to you guys, and those at home, don't hate me, but I'm about to do something bad.
You heard us talking about
please
it.
Please don't.
Yeah, so okay. Hold on. In fact, I should say this. Where is it? Where's that file where we
your
say,
spoiler
please
alert.
Don't hate me. Hold on, hate me. Gotta find it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Kind
of a dick. This down.
No.
Whatever appears up.
No.
Man, I hate that Trump.
Okay, fair enough. Don't hate me. That's
whatever
good enough.
Whatever you do, don't hate me.
All right, here it is. It's the worst sound in the history of film tech. Oh, gosh.
There it is.
There it is.
Why?
Now, imagine that for 8 minutes.
That was so bad. What were they doing? That was so bad. What were they thinking? Seriously. In a movie.
I think 30 seconds would have been enough to make me understand the uncomfortableness. And then you could have, you know, we could have carried on from there.
I'm not kidding. You can't hear it on the mic, but there is a dog outside now going. Row, 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 row. It's my neighbor. That is nice. Too funny.
Anytime you want to really tick off your neighbor, you've got the tool right there.
Exactly. Right. Actually, I've got that dog whistle app on my phone. And the thing I like about it is it doesn't work on most adults over the age of 30 because we don't have that range anymore. Right. But my kids can hear it and it's terrible. It drives them bananas. And I'll take that thing into like family parties or get togethers and turn that thing on for no reason and just see how long it takes for everyone to kind of lose their freaking minds. The adults can't hear it. It's just all the kids are like, what's that sound? And they're all like, I'm getting a headache. I mean, it's kind of terrible. It's a little jackassy, but I like to do it.
You're such a troll.
Well,
such a troll.
What are you going to do? All right. So here's a thing I'm playing only so I can hear Ibbot do the voice. Okay, so here, I'll play it first, and then Ibbot does the voice.
Now I know how a rat feels in a maze.
All right, give it to me.
Like a rat in a maze.
In a maze.
Nicely done. All right, that's the end of those things. Here's our checklist. Let's see. First on the film sack checklist, we have lots of gross close-ups of ants and bugs. Check. Many ants died to bring you this potato chip nugget, my queen. Check. And finally, everything bad starts in Arizona. Check. That's true.
At least it will next weekend. Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah, very nice. Ba-dum-bum. Other than the Shatnering, there are no actual Star Trek connections. There are zero, nothing, not one. I'm a little surprised that not even crew, but there's nothing. There's nobody.
Well, suffice it to say, if Lynn, what's her face, would have lived, she probably would have gone after William Shatner.
Oh, totally. And she could have been in. She'd have been in TNG as some Lynn ambassador Frederick, yeah. Or something.
Right.
Seems perfect for it. All right, the soundtrack, great. I'd give it a WHSMAAK for would have scared me as a kid. So there's that.
Oh, okay.
Oh, interesting. Now, I want to divide this soundtrack into two parts.
All right, give it.
One is the prog rock, the keyboard, squealy, long-held notes, etc. Mm-hmm. And the other is this bass solo that I really enjoy.
Yes, love that guitar bass solo.
Yeah, it just comes out every now and then.
It's any time the ants are walking around. It was like it was their walk on baseball music.
Yeah.
I love that.
It was weird. How about this? Let's do a Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 140 characters or less. This week, let's do something crazy and start with Randy.
Phase 4. The sort of old movie that your mama was talking about when she said, stop that right now. That's disgusting. We're taking you to church right now, young man.
Yeah. See? There.
True.
Randy, or sorry, Brian Dunaway.
Phase 4. Like a three-way with two hairy guys in a contamination chamber. Sure, it's artsy, but ew.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Release the creepy crawlers.
Yeah. Well, at least she was 20, I guess.
She was 20 at that point. However, those dudes were...
Not 20. Older.
Not 20.
No, they were not. Finally, Brian Ibbot.
Phase 4. Fake Hans Zarkov and fake Peter Fonda play scientists who basically do that thing the kids do with magnifying glasses and anthills.
Have I been known to do that a little bit?
Maybe a little bit.
In my day? All right. It's, oh, look. We've got an alternate title list here. We have the choice, looks like, two of them. The first one is Talk, 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 Ants, Talk, Ants, Talk, Talk, Ants, Talk. That's one of them. And our Farmer Goop. That one's a little easier to say, so I think we probably go with the latter there. We got an email from a listener. We get emails all the time on the show. Filmsack@gmail.com is where you'll send those. We'd love to read them. Keep them coming. Nathan wrote in, says, hello. I'm listening to the episode you recently did about The Firm. This got me to thinking about that fateful afternoon about 6 years ago that I will share with you now. You see, I live in Charlottesville, Virginia, and as luck would have it, so does Mr. John Grisham. One day I was walking back to my office from a very satisfying lunch. I realized I needed to get to let one rip, so I looked around and saw I was alone on the street to let her loose. Not 1 second later, a man turned the corner. My first thought was, oh, man, he had to have heard that. My second thought was, oh, God, now, and God knows he can smell it. My third thought, hey, that's John Grisham. We made eye contact, but never said a word to each other. I hope you enjoyed this tidbit. Love the show. Thanks. Take
care,
Nathan.
6 months later, a new movie called The Fart.
The Fart.
Right. Oh, no, I shat right in my Pelican boots. Oh.
Never shit in your Pelican grease. That's what I meant to say. Now, I do not know what our next movie is because we were iffy on whether something was hanging around. Do we know what that is, Randy? What is our plan? Do we know?
We
don't know.
Why, yes. Next week, we are going to watch Jackie Chan's The Accidental Spy.
Oh, man. That'll be light fare after this.
Is that the one with Jennifer Love Hewitt? Which one is that one?
Is that the one where he does some martial arts stuff?
It's an old one.
I think he does in this one. Yeah.
Accidental Spy.
Other people in the movie include Eric Tsang, Vivian Hsu, Glory Simon. Really not any. It's not a, Western film.
Yeah, it's a China movie.
It's a China movie. You can send all of your emails.
But he's right. It was. It was made in Hong Kong.
It's a Hong Kong
2001.
Movie.
Yeah, it'd be like me
That's
saying,
human eyes.
If I'd have said it's an American movie, you wouldn't have batted an
eye. That's a Round Eyes movie.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but
it's
China.
Also got Bradley James Allen and Scott Adkins.
Oh, they're Round Eyes for sure. Yeah. I'm with you. No, it's all very exciting. So Jackie Chan back at it. This will be our third Jackie Chan movie, I think. I think so.
Right.
Yeah, maybe.
Something Cop and then
Super Cop and Big Trouble Big Trouble.
This will be four.
Rumble
in the Bronx. Which one did we do live as a watch along?
Rumble in the Bronx.
Yeah.
Okay, and there were two others. So
Super
this will be
Cop and
fourth. And the noodle one we just watched.
Right.
Kung Fu Master.
The noodle, Kung Fu Master, right?
Did we ever see The Medallion? I wanted to see, that's the one I was thinking of, Jennifer Love Hewitt, but it wasn't. It was Claire Florent, the girl from that Meet Joe Black movie.
Oh, with Brad Pitt?
Right. The lady, Claire Forlani.
Forlani.
Yeah, that's it.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, The Medallion. One. Oh, yeah. I never did see that either. That could be fun if we ever get around to it.
I could have sworn we've seen another one. Wasn't there one with, or am I thinking of one of the ones you were just describing? But it's where, I'm trying to describe it in a way that separates it from other Jackie Chan movies.
Is it where
he's this guy who gets caught up in a bunch of stuff and he has
to use
martial
Tuxedo.
The Tuxedo.
Tuxedo wasn't Jennifer Love.
No, we haven't seen that one though. Yeah. But you're saying you want to see that one.
Like the Dragon something or...
Double Dragon?
Not Double Dragon. A Drunken Master.
Yeah, we just did that one. I think
we
counted
that
one. Yeah,
yeah, we saw that.
So we got Drunken Master.
No, did we say that one? We were talking about the other ones we'd seen.
Oh, I thought we did. No?
Cop, Rumble in the Bronx.
Drunken Master.
And
now this one. So this will be four.
Yeah, never mind.
It's all right. That's all right.
Too busy looking it up to say,
what's the one where the guy in a tuxedo gets into a bunch of trouble? Is that what you said earlier?
No.
I'm mixing it up with Brian said now.
Yeah, I just said it's where this regular guy, who happens to know some martial arts gets caught up in a situation where he has to use martial arts to get out of it.
You just described every film he's ever made.
Yes, nice exactly. Work.
That was the irony.
All right, watch that next week. Accidental Spy. Yes.
I'll give you some more. We're gonna we've been holding on for RoboCop 2, and I think we're gonna go ahead and see what happens.
We gotta do that.
After Accidental Spy, we're gonna check out the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie Cyborg.
Yeah, dude.
Down the road here.
Yeah. There's some good stuff coming up, and we've also got some movies that have been sent to us. Some of which you guys already have. Some of which I need to send to people. Some of which I'd forgotten I had in a pile over there. Well, we're going to try to get to all of them.
These pile of movies.
We almost need to do an entire month of nothing but listener submitted
Yeah, there's a lot.
Movies, because we have so many.
The big country one I got sent recently, I can't remember if that was for all of us or if he was just trying to get me to watch it, but that is now streaming, which might be fun to see an old Western. I actually kind of have a confession here to make about a turnaround I've had on... Okay, what was the John Wayne movie that I was like that I vetoed? What was that called?
Atari.
It was the story of Atari and how the first Pong game came to fruition.
Each Atari.
I've had a weird spate lately of having old John Wayne Westerns in the background while I work. And I don't know why, and I don't know why I'm craving it. It's a weird comfort food, maybe. Maybe it's because this was the week I had to get a colonoscopy, and there were some unknowns.
If John Wayne was here, he would understand what I'm going through.
Totally would, dude.
Did you notice that True Grit is still streaming?
I did. I saw that as well. So I watched Hondo and The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. I watched both those.
He shot Liberty Valance.
And they're old as hell, these movies.
He was the greatest man of all.
50s, 60s, you know, old stuff. For some reason, Hondo was made in like 53 and was color, and Liberty Valance was 66 and black and white, which is weird. But anyway, it's like weird comfort food from an era that isn't even mine. Like that was my parents and my grandparents who cared about that. And for whatever reason, it got me coming around on this idea that maybe, just maybe, it wouldn't be that bad to see Hatari.
So I've already seen Hatari.
I know, and see, here's the problem is that
dang 6 hours.
To do it for Film Sack, you'd have to watch it again so it's fresh.
So yeah. Instead, let's watch a different one.
We will see.
Randy would do it because he loves it.
I'd happily watch Hatari again.
You watched it like 8 times, didn't you?
Yeah.
No, but I would happily watch it again.
Well, my point is that there are a million John Wayne things streaming, and we should pick one. It doesn't have to be Hatari, but I think it might be fun to find something. I don't know what.
Our best choices, in my opinion, and you said you just saw A Man Who Shot Liberty Valance,
I did,
right?
Yeah.
And you watched Hondo.
Yeah. Hondo's not worth sacking.
I think we want to watch True Grit for Film Sack because it's famous. Yeah. Everybody knows it. It doesn't hurt to go back and watch it. Mm-hmm. And capturing Glenn Campbell clips has got to be good news.
Okay, all right. Well, let's get that in the rotation at some point. I think that would be fun, and it's a way for me to pay back on that Hatari nonsense. A while back where I vetoed it. And you guys had seen it. A couple of you had seen it all the way. I think Ibbot dodged the bullet.
I did.
I saw most of it and captured a bunch of clips from it and then just said, ugh, this is awful. And I think
from mouth to colon.
I think it just took, I just needed to be in the right frame of mind, and I think I'm in that frame of mind now. So anyway, I mean, I even have stuff like this.
My name is Luis Francisco Garcia Lopez. Yeah. I don't wear pajamas.
Yeah, there's another one. See, I got all these clips. Anyway.
So what we can do is we can watch Accidental Spy and RoboCop 2 and then go back in time for True Grit.
All right, I'm into that.
Cool.
69 was that. That was the year. That's awesome. Year I was born. Okay, well, there you have it.
69, dude.
That's our next set of movies. Very excited about them. Thank you all for being here. Filmsack.com is our website. Please go there and enjoy the comments on the blog. It's always fun to hear you guys interact and read those and participate. See what you're thinking about the episodes. Filmsack@gmail.com is our email address. You can find us on Twitter @Filmsack. Leave us a review on iTunes or wherever podcasts can be found. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Yes.
We'll see you next time.
Ants. This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Hello, listeners of Film Sack. Do you like this show? You want to show a little support that can kind of go a long way to keep it on the air and keep it cool and keep it doing what it does for you? For as little as, I don't know, $1 a month, you can contribute to the Patreon for Frog Pants, and that helps this and shows like it continue to thrive and survive on the Frog Pants Network. Here's a simple way to do it. Just go to patreon.com/frogpants and throw a little bit our way. Imagine $1 a month for all the Film Sack entertainment you get each month. It's maybe the best value in entertainment of all time. Or something like that. That's patreon.com/frogpants.